The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Welcome back to the 750. I am your O, RJ Ochoa. He is your 7-5, Mr. Two-time Super Bowl champion, Mr. College Football Hall of Famer, Mr. Everything, Anything, All Things Fantastic, the one, the only, Tony Casillas. Tony, good day to you, sir.
You know what? This is, what, our 18th week, 19th week of doing the show?
Something like that, yeah.
And all that money I'm paying you is finally starting to pay off. You don't have to introduce me like that, brother. I'm the 7-5. But you know what? I'm a little anxious today because I had to dodge a lot of cars today.
Oh, really?
It's Thursday morning, and as we're doing the 750, yeah, I mean, let me just say this real quick, and we'll get right into it.
Air it out.
Big,
air it
huge
out.
Game.
Get on the couch.
Look, I don't discriminate against anyone that drives a minivan. Uh-oh. I mean, I think we've all had that moment. But my gosh, when I'm in the parking lot, and, you know, I work out every morning, and I come out just to my spot just a little bit, don't honk your horn and look at me like you're crazy.
Someone
did that, and then it was like one of those mornings, you know, I go up and get my coffee, and then I'm driving down the road in my little community. It's supposed to be a small community, and some kid pulls out in front of me. So that was a second car bullet I had to dodge. But other than that, I'm great. I just feel like I need to vent that to you. You know, sometimes you're the voice of therapy. So
hey. You know,
that's part of the whole relationship we have, brother.
When I was a little kid and people would ask me what I wanted to be when I grew up, I would say a psychologist. So, you know, it finally paid off to some degree.
There you go.
You know, I think
what's that going to cost me?
You know, this time's on me.
Thank you. Next time, it's going to cost you a lot of money, brother.
We'll let you know what the deductible is. But, you know, when I think of minivans, I always forget what movie it is. But it's like that one movie where, like, a dad, like, drops kids off at school and they stop at, like, a grocery store for breakfast or something like that, and, like, an armed robbery breaks out. I always think of that anytime I hear the word minivan. So, I don't know.
Well, and also, I'm not trying to stereotype or not going to, you know, I don't want to make the politically or incorrect assumption here, but it just seemed like this morning it was more the female drivers that we're pretty anxious to get wherever they need to do. But anyway, that's here or there.
Well, that's, you know, hey, I mean, whatever happened, at least you made it out alive. You got your coffee, I presume, and it is time for the 750. Before we talk, obviously, Tony, about the game of the century, really, with the Cowboys this Saturday night, I want to get your take on late Wednesday night. We, you know, it was reported lots of places that your boy Kyler Murray is considering entering the NFL draft as opposed to playing professional baseball for the Oakland Athletics. Now, I went to Oakland last year, and I can understand why somebody wouldn't want to play there. I can get it. But you played football, the wear and tear. I mean, you know, life for Kyler would certainly be interesting. What are your thoughts on Kyler Murray? Because there's a world where he ends up as the quarterback of the New York Giants, and I think that's a terrifying world, but it's a possible one.
Well, yeah, one of my favorite movies, though, is Moneyball, and that was based on the whole metrics of running the Oakland A's, but I don't get it. I don't know who's giving him advice to – and it's not like he's going to play both sports. He's going to pick, it sounds like. That's a rumor has it that he's going to choose football – or, excuse me, football over baseball. And I just – And we talk about all the measurables all the time with the quarterback. 6 foot is kind of the limit when it comes to playing that position. But he's 5'8", and I just don't – it's hard for me to play in the game and envision a 5'8 quarterback playing behind an offensive line that everyone averages 6'4". Mm-hmm. Now, he's quick. He's got ridiculous skill set, athleticism. And I thought about this. Doug Flutie was a stretch, and I think he was probably 5'10" or something like that. Mm-hmm. But my advice, and I understand. People are telling him, hey, Cliff Kingsbury. I don't know if you saw this. Now the new coach of Arizona, the Cardinals had said something back in October when they were playing that. If I was a head coach, I would draft. He'd be my number one pick. Well. Guess what happens now? That's all coming, coming to light now.
The Cardinals have the number one pick.
And so, Cliff, you're going to pick Kyler Murray's your number one pick. But in saying that, RJ, I just don't see it working out. And look, I'd love to see the kid playing in the National Football League, but that's just the measurable that when you're looking at a 5'8 quarterback that his skill set is running around and you play in a National Football League and the speed of the game and everything changes. The durability, I just don't see him lasting in a National Football League. So my advice is to go play baseball and not listen to all the noise around you and everything that's going on. I guess go with your heart, but have some real reality about your decision.
Yeah, I mean, you could probably make more money in baseball. You could play a lot longer. The road trips are maybe a little bit different, obviously. Baseball lifestyle is certainly a different one. But yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it will be very. We haven't really seen a decision of this magnitude affect the NFL in a long time. So it's gonna be an interesting offseason at the very least with Kyler and Dwayne Haskins and whatnot and the rookie quarterbacks that will be. But that's the draft, and that's hopefully a long time away from now because the Cowboys, Tony, are in the divisional round of the playoffs. They're one of the final 8 teams left, and they're a game away from. Some pretty, far away territory for them. They have not played in an NFC Championship game, as you know, since 1995. With a win on Saturday night, they get there. First of all, how big is that sentence? When you guys pulled off what you did, it had been a long time since the Cowboys had been great. And we talked about this last week, but how aware do you think the players and the team are of, okay, we can do something that nobody has done in a long time, and that's really important.
Well, it's been 23 years if they go on and they, it's been 23 years since they played 2 consecutive playoff games, and mm-hmm. to think if they go on and, just go break the barriers of reality, as we always go back and look at early on the season. I mean, they're 11-6 counting the playoffs. That's how 11-6 at this point. And I think as a player, and I thought about this because during that run we made in the 90s, mm-hmm. I don't think that we really realized how good we were.
That's an interesting point.
I think that in 91 when we got beat by the Detroit Lions and got embarrassed, we kind of learned from that. Mm-hmm. But I think going into the next season – we really didn't think about it. And I think that's – and everyone wants to they want to throw that around. They want to just look at – do the forensic part of it and like, well, what are you thinking about? Well, I don't think players really think about that. I think that they realize the confidence of what they've done and being able to win and in the moment and playing. And first of all, the other team has to have a lot – dictates how you're going to feel going in the course of the game. Mm-hmm. And I'll go back to when we played San Francisco in 92. In San Francisco, that was a tough game, but there was some resiliency and some playmaking going on. But I think this team, no one's ever there's a few guys that have part of the playoffs. But other than that, the younger guys, they don't know any different than just playing another game. But there's an elevation of expectation the week before. Mm-hmm. It's different. You feel this invincible nature within you. And I think when you get in the game, then everything just kind of plays out. And really, I think that you just try to treat it as a normal game. Once you get over the novelty of it, the first snap and getting the game started.
There's a lot of wisdom in what you said. And I've been thinking about this game all week and kind of what direction I want to go with, you know, how I want to pick it and how I see it and whatnot. And I think there's certainly something to having been battle tested and having been there, certainly in the divisional round 2 years ago when the Cowboys lost to the Packers. I think that that's a huge learning experience for Dak and Zeke. You know, I like to say, I think I mentioned this last week, I talk about a baby in a construction zone. And a baby in a construction zone has no idea the threat that it's under. You know what I mean? And so I think when you get there, if you have no idea, you don't know what's at stake, so you're not afraid of anything. And I think the Cowboys, they're at a point now where they've experienced enough that they know what it's like. They know the pain and the suffering associated with losing this game. The Rams don't. Last year, you know, booted in the wild card round. And I know that everybody's praised Sean McVay and Jared Goff and co, but they have not been here either. And so I think that the Cowboys are certainly more battle tested. And, you know, I don't know if you think there's anything to this, but since March, it's been Rams, Rams, Rams. They're going, they're going, they're going. And I think it's a dangerous thing. I know this is why Jimmy certainly kept y'all in check when you crown a team early. Whereas the Cowboys, they sunk to the lowest of the lows and nobody believed in them. And I think, you know, it creates a different sort of bond, maybe a more dangerous bond. I think the Cowboys are the hungrier dog in the fight. And that's the one that I will always lean towards because it's a survival of the fittest sort of mentality.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. And I'll go back to in 91, we were very humbled by what we experienced by getting our asses kicked in Detroit. Mm-hmm. And I think if you look at the Cowboys season, maybe they had that moment when they had to fight back, when they had to go over that through the adversity of just not knowing if they were maybe dreaming about getting to this part of the season and playing a second playoff game. And maybe they've really battle tested themselves going through that. I think you really have to build that. And, you know, some teams, look at their opponent. I mean, they clinch it in week 13. And so, and then they've had some experience, but it's the same. And that's a good point you brought up. A lot of these, the team that they're playing hasn't experienced this. Now they're playing at home. And I think we've talked about this the whole week about this maybe being a 50-50 game as far as fans. Mm-hmm. Maybe not have that emotional aspect and effect because they're playing them at home. But I think that it's on both sides of the ball. It's, you know, I think it's a novelty part of it. And I think, and you brought up the point about Jason Garrett, the leadership. I think it takes to stay focused, going on the road and being able to experience, you know, all the crazy stuff that goes on the road and the distractions, because there's distractions. But here's the thing about it that I sense this with this team is that they're kind of going through that beginning infancy of the rock star feeling, the rock star going on the road and teams liking you, loving you, beloving you because you're back. Yeah. And I think that's how you have to handle all those things. And it really adds a lot more to the emotional aspect of knowing that you're there and people are there to support you. And it just kind of gives you this extra intangible strength, if you will.
Yeah, I remember watching the America's game on the 92 team. And I remember Ken Norton talking about when you guys got to the Super Bowl, obviously in Pasadena, not in LA, but you know, he talked about, you know, we thought we were Hollywood, and then we were literally in Hollywood, and so
exactly.
It kind of made this whole thing whatever. Before we talk about the game itself, you mentioned distraction, and I only bring this up because it was a big talking point, and we like to address those here. Michael Irvin's on ESPN San Antonio every Wednesday, your boy. And he's on with a friend of mine, Jason Minix, on the Blitz. And
right.
Michael told them this Wednesday that Jerry is apparently having a big party, big soiree, if you will, Friday night in L.A. because the game is Saturday. I don't know. I don't know if this is on Rodeo Drive. I don't know what Jerry's thinking, what he's got planned, if there's going to be In-N-Out catered, whatever the case may be. There was a lot of discussion about how this is a bad idea, this is a bad thing, whatever. My take on it before, you know, we get yours is, look, I mean, Dak ain't going to this thing, you know, like Garrett's not showing up. I mean, Jerry, we all know is his age and his point in life and the Cowboys can do something that they haven't done in a long time. Dude, enjoy it. He's the owner. Jerry doesn't need to be crushing film Friday night. So you know what? My thought is go for it, Jerry. Enjoy yourself, man. I mean, live like a king. And hopefully, you know, that that party continues for another week. But as long as the players and coaches aren't associated with this, I don't see a big deal. I don't know how you see it, though.
Well, this has been going on for however long Jerry's owned the Cowboys. I mean, this is his team. It's his brand. And I think he takes ownership. And as you mentioned, you know, what does a billionaire do at that age? I mean, he goes out and buys, what, a 350-foot yacht? I know you saw that. I don't know if you – and, you know, that's Jerry being Jerry. I mean, this is part of what comes with the star. And I think that, you know, what I alluded to earlier is that kind of comes along with it. And if you back it up, you go out there and the Cowboys win and get into the NFC Championship, you know, Jerry's going to enjoy the moment. He's going to enjoy
it. Yeah.
I mean, I have no problem with that. And you're right. I mean, we weren't going to – we had meetings. It was business. We're working. We're, you know, employees of Jerry. You know, the reason why he's celebrating out there is because of what we have done. He's paying you a ton of money and the expectations. And, you know, he surrounded those players with coaches and the vehicles to get where they are now. So that's all peripheral things. Those are noise, and it's a great storyline. I mean, the media, whoever wants to go. I mean, that's just Jerry being Hollywood. I mean, he embraces that moment. I got no problem with it. I'd do the same thing if I was him.
Hey, I mean, I hope that there's a lot of Johnny Walker there. You know, I hope he's well lubricated because Saturday's going to be a long day waiting for kickoff.
Don't start the rumor that we're already got champagne on ice.
See, like, that's a different thing. Certainly,
don't start drinking any champagne and let that leak out to the press because. Nah. We know where that'll go.
Drink whatever you want, but you're right. Steer clear of champagne.
Well, the champagne on the way back on the after we win the game on the plane.
Exactly. You get the champagne and the ski goggles for everything.
Cristal, Dom Perignon, whatever you guys want.
But for now, just line up the shots, Jerry. But I agree. I mean, like the coolest part. Not the coolest, but one of the cooler things about the Cowboys is the brand and is the international fame associated with it. Like. It is, you know, when I think Jerry Jones in Los Angeles, I think Entourage, and he was on Entourage for a handful of episodes, and like that is that when I was growing up and fell in love with the Cowboys, that's the Jerry, you know, sort of picture and disposition that I understood, and I think that's cool. That adds to his fame. He's a Pro Football Hall of Famer, man. I mean, just live it up. So you're in L.A. Your team is a step away from the NFC Championship game. I think it's awesome. I mean,
well, you know, Jerry is just. I mean, this is his identity. I mean, the guy has done so much and made so much money, regardless of football. He just used that as just a catapult. But I mean, this is. You know, something that's ongoing. I think Jerry's just been waiting for this moment where he could validate. Mm-hmm. And right now should be a top candidate for maybe general manager of the year or co-general manager. Whoever, you know, Stephen Jones ever made the decision to make some of the changes during the season, Amari Cooper, hell yes, I would celebrate. Hell, I think if I was an owner and I wanted to pattern myself and kind of live a little and enjoy life and be a billionaire and own one of the most marketable franchise and the most valuable franchise in America, I think I'd like to be just like Jerry.
Yeah, I agree. You know, when I last thing on this, when I toured the Falcons stadium, when I went to that game, my dad and I went. We toured the stadium, and they talked about Arthur Blanc, and they showed us his suite, and he's got all this, like, fine Italian marble. The guy owns Home Depot, so I mean, getting material isn't exactly difficult for him. But they talked about how every game he brings in his own personal bartender and all this stuff. And then they said that the only thing he drinks is Michelob Ultra. And I thought, well, why does the guy need a bartender? I mean, if all he's drinking is Michelob Ultra, what on earth does he need somebody setting this up for him for?
Well, he drinks that skinny beer. That's what I call it. It's kind of like having a skinny margarita.
Well,
you kind of strip everything out of it. But hey, if that's what he likes to drink,
but
he probably drinks it out of a gold cup or glass or something like
that. Yeah. But that's the owner lifestyle. And you know what?
It really is.
Live it up. I mean,
yep.
Okay. So the game itself, Cowboys Rams, this is a great uniform matchup because the Rams are going to wear their throwbacks Saturday night on Fox. Your boy Troy and Buck on the call, Aaron Andrews. This is, I mean, it's got all the material that you would want. I mean, it is huge in so many ways. You've got so many storylines. Wade Phillips is the defensive coordinator for the Rams. He was Jason Garrett's predecessor in Dallas. You've got the number one pick in the 2016 draft in Jared Goff and the 135th pick in Dak Prescott. The fourth pick in Ezekiel Elliott and Todd Gurley. You have Chris Richard, who knows the Rams very, very well. You have Tavon Austin, who was traded from the Rams this offseason to the Cowboys. So I ask you, Tony, of all of the storylines, which is your favorite and why?
Well, I think that I'm going to go – when I look at this, the Rams, I look at Todd Gurley as the offensive MVP in the NFC, and then you have Aaron Donald, has 20.5 sacks, arguably the best defensive player – well, I know he's the best defensive player in the National Football League, but should get MVP, period. 20.5 sacks and plays the interior part. I think of where the Rams are, and I think Sean McVay, really just what he's done to this team. And I think the biggest storyline is when I think about this. This is Jared Goff's third year in the National Football League. Remember 3 years ago with that whole Jeff Fisher, Hard Knocks on HBO. And how does he mold Jared Goff? How do they go from that guy almost being regarded as a bust to now being a very viable, what he has, 25 touchdown passes this year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's thrown a lot of picks, but how they molded him where he is now to really be a legitimate franchise quarterback in National Football League. To me, that is the biggest story when I look at this team, that how they transitioned that from that first year to now leading this team into, you know, deep in the playoffs.
How scared of Jared Goff are you then? I mean, do you think he's a
quarterback? I'm not really scared of him. That's the thing about it. I think where they developed him and what he's done with this guy since the first year, I think for me, that's a great storyline. But right now, when I look at him and how they're playing offensively, you know, Todd Gurley to me is an offensive. I mean, that dude's a horse. Mm-hmm. And I think he'll be ready. He's been rested for 2 weeks. He's, nursing a sore knee, meaning he's got, 1,400 yards rushing, and just, I mean, he's a banger. I mean, he catches the ball, does so much for that offense. But, you know, Jared Goff, he really doesn't right now. Now, I'll say that and watch him come out and, you know, throw four touchdown passes. I hope that's not going to happen. But he does have – he's legitimate. He's got a great offensive scheme, and he's pretty accurate. But I just think there's some cracks in that football quarterback. Mm-hmm. Armor that I've seen that maybe the Cowboys, through pressure and some other things they can do defensively, can exploit some of those.
Well, and I think this might sound ridiculous. It might sound totally logical, but I was more scared of Russell Wilson and Chris Carson than I am of Jared Goff, even with Todd Gurley. I understand that Todd Gurley, you could argue, is the best back in the NFL. Maybe he's number two to Zeke. I mean, there's a lot of ways that argument could go. But the point remains is Russell Wilson, the quarterback touches the ball, and that's what matters most. And Russell Wilson is the far more terrifying option to contain and to limit. We talked about how his ability to run on the Cowboys was going to be the difference last week, and thankfully it wasn't. Jared Goff's going to be stuck back there. I mean, and he's going to be stuck with the hot boys trying to meet him. And so as great as Todd Gurley is, I don't know that Jared Goff's going to be able to get it to him, even on some screen passes and things like that, because I think the hot boys are going to wreak havoc on Jared Goff's life. I think that this is, in some ways, a more advantageous matchup for the Cowboys defense than even the Seahawks were, just because of that one particular thing.
Right. Well, I need to correct myself. Jared Goff actually had 32 touchdown passes and 12 interceptions, and Todd Gurley close to 1,300, but 12 regardless, here or there. He's a great player.
They're awesome. That's the point.
Yeah. But you know what? I think when the difference, and you know, I would like to get your thoughts on this. When I watched the Seattle Seahawks play the Cowboys, I thought I was watching Scott Linehan at times, because Scott Linehan's in a, let's say Scott Linehan early on in the season, how we were just criticizing no creativity. How many times did he just kept running the football? They finally decided to, you know, they kept doing that zone read, handing it off. And finally, you know, Russell kept the ball. Maybe that was designed that way, but there was no creativity of getting him out of the pocket. They were going to live and die to run the football. Now, I think Sean McVay is a little different. his offense has run a lot different. He's got a hell of a running back, and his quarterback, as I just read, I mean, Jared Goff threw for almost 5,000 yards. So the dude is having an MVP season. But I think the 12 interceptions, and I think maybe there's some plays that can be had there, because I think we, you and I both agree it's going to come down to the Cowboys getting some turnovers and tilting the field and have opportunities for them. But I think the difference between Russell Wilson, and now I can say this, that the Cowboys have won, is that I'd probably be a little bit more scared of Jared Goff, because they're not going to let him just sit back there and hand the ball off. They're going to do. They're going to keep the Cowboys in check. And that's what's beautiful about Sean McVay, is that he does an excellent job as a play caller doing that.
Well, I mean, so first of all, if that's the case, I mean, I think this is rightfully, if you're the Cowboys, you've got to make Jared Goff beat you. You can't lose because Todd Gurley ran all over you, because that's really predictable. You know, if the Cowboys lose because Jared Goff just, I mean, carved them up, I can live with that. You know what I mean? Because that's the highest percent that you have to play. But I don't think he can. I don't think that Jared Goff can single-handedly will his team to victory like that. He's never had a big win like that in the NFL. He's never had a big win in college. I mean, Russell Wilson's a guy. He's a lot like Dak. That when the moment is there, he rises. I mean, he embraces the moment and he takes it in and he becomes a superhero. Jared Goff kind of. I mean,
yeah, but I don't want to fall asleep at the will of Jared Goff. I don't want to underestimate what he's done. And going back to the way he's transitioned and the way Sean McVay has revolutionized him as a quarterback, I mean, the transition has been amazing. And, you know, Robert Woods is a good wide receiver, and he's got, you know, 1,200 yards receiving. So they do have some playmakers. But I'm not going to go in thinking that all they're going to do is they got to stop Todd Gurley, because right. They're going to run the football. And that's the thing about this offense. And that's why Jared Goff is putting up all these stats, RJ, is because, look, you know, you really – the way he runs his offense, the way he moves things around and really just kind of keeps them in check, that's the part that, again, I don't think the Seattle Seahawks used in their offense against the Cowboys.
No, I agree. I mean, it felt like once the run game – it was really obvious that the run game wasn't going to work for Seattle, and they kept trying it.
They kept doing it. They kept forcing and forcing. Okay, keep doing it, well, even to the fourth quarter.
And so the only way the Seahawks could have won that game, and thankfully they didn't, would have been if they had let Russell loose. We both agree with that. And so I do think, to a degree, I don't think you can completely neutralize Todd Gurley. But the Cowboys are not going to lose because Todd Gurley is going to go off on them. They're not, right, because they're better than that.
They're going to take – yeah, they're much better defense. Right. And, yeah, they'll take care of the run. I really think they will.
And so let's put the Rams in that boat that the Seahawks were in, where, okay, the run game's not – you know, even with Todd Gurley, the run game's not where you want it to be. The run game's not going to be the reason you win. So then it becomes, okay, Jared Goff has to do what Russell Wilson was able to do that the Seahawks asked him not to for whatever reason. And Jared Goff has to be the reason you win. Not to fall asleep at the wheel, I don't think he can be the reason that they win. I think he can certainly carry them to victory. They have 13 wins, for goodness sake. And I'm not trying to slight him by any
right,
measure.
Exactly.
But I don't think that he has what Russell Wilson has. Because the reason Russell Wilson was able to kill the Cowboys, he was able to get outside the pocket. Those deep passes, you know, when they covered, what was it, 50 yards in two plays in like 3 seconds, that was Russell Wilson getting out the pocket, letting Tyler Lockett get open. And boom, there's your big play. I don't think Jared Goff has that capability. It's not a knock on him. He just doesn't have the athleticism that Russell has. And so I think that's your best chance. I think you ask your hot boys to neutralize Todd Gurley and to keep Jared Goff in the pocket and make him beat you. And you trust that Chris Richard's got that secondary to a point where, yeah, I mean, you know, you're not gonna skunk the Rams. That's the thing. You have to understand, you have to come to terms with, okay, they're a very good football team. They're gonna put up a fight, but you've gotta I think that's the highest chance of victory. That's really my point.
Well, I think you have to minimize that. And I think if you look at one ingredient, something that you really can hopefully exploit, and it's getting a great rush. We have seen the Cowboys the whole season. You know, that's their go-to thing, because they're so good at getting after the running game and then the passer. I think there's so many guys that have stepped up also when you look at the defensive line and in the interior part, and, you know, Antoine Woods, Malik Collins. I mean, these guys are quietly playing pretty damn good football, but they don't get the headlines that DeMarcus Lawrence and Jalen Smith and all the other usual suspects. But in saying that, I think that really gives them a chance because they are a dual team. They can play the run, but they can rush. And I like the depth and what they do. And I think when you have someone like Jared Goff, you have to get to him right away. You just got to send a message. Look, you're not going to be sitting back there being able to find, your wide receivers. You're not going to be able to look to the field. And I think that's what Sean McVay will try to do. When you have an attacking defense like Dallas, you try to slow them down with different quick passes, screens, a lot of things that's not let the momentum going. And I expect them to try to do that. And, you know, Jared Goff will get the ball out quick also. And to me, that's kind of like he's not Andrew Luck, but I think that Sean McVay is smart enough offensive coordinator to know, look, we're not going to have all day long to sit there and you know, be able to look downfield and find our check three or four checks. Mm-hmm. That's not going to happen with this team.
So I think it's fair to assume I think the Cowboys can keep the Rams anywhere between 20 and 26 points, something like that. I think that's fair.
That would be huge. If they do that, RJ, they're going to win the game.
Well, okay. So tiny little bold prediction right there. But let's go.
I'm not trying to jump ahead, but I had to really hit on that point.
We just got to the backyard in the pool. I said, hey, Tony, I'm going to go turn the lights on and just boom, you just cannonballed.
Yeah,
right
I don't in. Want, you're like, okay, we're going to go straight to the dessert. We need to have, the salad and then the main course and, Tony, yeah. You don't order the dessert first. Yeah. Although some people do.
Some people do. That's how they eat in Europe. I don't know. But anyway, okay, so on the other side of the ball, I think that this has the potential to be really great or really bad, obviously, and big shocker there.
Yeah.
There's something, and I feel like this is an underrated aspect of this, and I know we've talked about maybe Jason Garrett does have his hand more in the offensive game plan as of late than he did earlier this season, so let's assume that that's true. So then you have Jason Garrett planning and coaching against Wade Phillips. And so, for all, matters, it seems like Jason and Wade have a great relationship. And the way Wade's career ended in Dallas was unfortunate. But obviously, Jason ascended to that role. That's kind of juicy when you think about it. I mean, they're literally going against one another. And it seems like, a David versus Goliath sort of thing. Like, the Cowboys offense has been really meek and the Rams, at least on paper, have a really strong defense. They've obviously not been as great as many would have thought, throughout the season and especially over the tail end. But the question, I guess, is do you think that independent of talent or variables or players that Jason Garrett can outcoach and out-scheme Wade Phillips?
I think Wade Phillips, I think he's been coaching in the National Football League since birth. It seems like he's been in the league for 60 years, however long he is. But I just got so much respect for Wade Phillips. And it's amazing his longevity. And, he's obviously been in the league a long time, but he's pretty innovative. And look at the guys he has on his team. I think with Wade likes to take his shots.
Yeah.
Wade is he's good at disguising different. And it can be pretty complex, and I never played for Wade, but it can be complex. The complexity is at times you have to do a lot of different things. But I think what he does, he kind of minimizes, and there's like four or five, six or seven different looks he likes to give you, but runs a different or maybe fewer formations and runs different types of blitzes or variances and everything. But I think for him, Wade is you have to really try to create a big play. And I've been thinking about this before we started our podcast this morning is how are you going to minimize Aaron Donald? Because he is the catalyst on that team. And he's had 20 and a half sacks and you watch him, it just jumps out. I mean, the guy is, he's a game changer. He's someone like Reggie White. And everyone had seen Reggie White and
have
the younger generation. That dude was a minister of defense. He's unstoppable. But I think you have to neutralize, his ability to – because he's a catalyst on the front line. But I think for me, again, it's kind of like the Cowboys defense, Wade's defense. They're not from top to bottom. I don't think they're as good as Dallas. I don't think they have the depth. I think Aaron Donald's a tremendous player. Their ends are good. I mean, they have good edge rushers, which Wade Phillips utilizes those guys. But I think the Cowboys, again, they have to try to neutralize someone like Aaron Donald and run plays to slow him down, just like the Rams offense need to try to do to the Cowboys defense, because they are so active. They'd like to move upfield. Mm-hmm. But I think Wade Phillips, I think they have a propensity to play a little bit undisciplined because they're acclimated. They're used to getting up the field and creating havoc.
Well, so it's funny that you would bring up Reggie White, as the Cowboys are a step away from the NFC title game. The last NFC championship game they played in featured Reggie White. Cowboys beating the Packers, as you mentioned, 23 years ago. So, you know, maybe you gave him some good luck there. Who knows? But,
the irony of the old.
Yeah, that's right. So I agree with you. I think you can catch the Rams, not catch them sleeping, that's the wrong way to put it, but you can catch them jumping, you know, because they want to jump, and that makes them great. You know what I mean? You jump, and you live and die by that if you're the Rams. You live by the chaos it creates, but you die by the risk that you take. And so I think that the key for the Cowboys, and this is something they're allergic to, is you got to go play action. You have to. That's the only way you can keep Aaron Donald in check. That's the only way you can keep that secondary in check, because they want to bite. They want to jump. I mean, you're playing with snakes right now. You've got to find a way to push them off. This game could come down. You know, we talked about the irony associated with Connor Williams last week, because he was taken with the pick the Seahawks wanted for Earl Thomas. Connor Williams is going to have the game of his life, because I think we all, to a degree, can depend on Tyron Smith, Joe Looney, Zach Martin, and Lyle Collins, but it might be Xavier Suofilo, who knows? But if it's Connor, if it's Xavier, that left guard spot is going to have, whoever it is, if it's Xavier or Connor, the game of their lives, because Aaron Donald is coming off a lot of rest, and he wants to prove a point, and he's got Wade Phillips dialing him up. But I think play action. I think that you've got to do it. You've got to utilize it as much as Scott Linehan doesn't want to.
Well, I know Michael Brockers. I mentioned him. He's a defensive end, and we didn't even mention Ndamukong Suh. They brought him in via free agency. And how's that? I mean, how's someone like Ndamukong Suh get overshadowed by another player? That's because Aaron Donald's that good. I'm not really concerned about Suh, because to me, when you watch him, he likes to take plays off. He's not the active guy, but he is a strong, powerful guy that can take up space, which when you're trying to run the football, I mean, that's a tough task for, you know, the interior part of that offensive line, is to move those type of guys. And then you have Corey Littleton, and he's a tremendous linebacker. Aqib Talib is a tremendous defensive back. So I think their offense obviously overshadows, and Aaron Donald overshadows the rest of their defense, but yeah, you're right. I mean, you got to slow them down. You can't give them a chance to tee off. And let me just tell you this. Dak Prescott, which likes to hold the ball, we all know that.
You can't
sit back there and hold the ball against Aaron Donald. No. He will find you, and he will seek you, and he will try to kill you.
That sounds like a great movie. He will, and like, there's this great music behind.
I think that's from Taken.
Yeah, maybe Taken. That's true. Yeah, like I will. Yeah.
Maybe that wasn't the right line, but you get the point.
It scared me.
He doesn't have time to sit back there and pat the ball like he usually does. No. He's going to have to get rid of it because Aaron Donald's going to be breathing down his throat.
You mentioned Aqib Talib. He had a pick six on Dak last time he faced him with the Broncos last season. That was really the last shellacking, for lack of a better word, that the Cowboys took. Look, there's a lot of reasons to not believe in the Cowboys. I think we all agree with that. Offensively, we both agree Aaron Donald is the linchpin. He's the reason. He's going to be what the Rams lean on. If you're the Cowboys, on a rudimentary level, what's your offensive game plan? Is it Zeke's got to touch the ball 50 times?
You know what? As weird as it sounds, and people are going to like think, what are you crazy? I'm going to run right at him. I'm going to double down. I'm going to run the football right at him right away. Say, look, we're just going to double down. We're going to try to isolate you. We're not going to run away from you. I think sometimes people think, well, you got to run away from the elephant in the room. No. Sometimes you just got to go. You got to go find him and just try to run at him. And look, you know, if he fights double teams and he's able to, you know, to be able to make plays, and hey, more power to him. Then we'll think of something else. But I'm going to try to just run right at him, you know, run at power scrapes, get to the second level of linebackers, and say, look, we're going to – it's a state of mind, man. We're here. We're on the road, and we're not – Aaron Donald, look, we've got a good offensive line. I don't care who's missing. But we're not going to let you beat us and let you make plays all over the field, upfield, and create opportunities for your defense. No, we're going to take it right to you.
I guess that's fair. I mean, to a degree, I suppose a lot of NFL teams, you almost outthink yourself because you're like, okay, we can't go anywhere near him. You know what I mean? Well, the guy plays in the middle of the defense. You know,
like he's so good, though, man.
I know. But
that dude, look, I hate you know me. I'm a old defensive lineman. I start salivating a little bit when you start talking about dudes like this because the dude is just – he's so quick. He's not even that big.
He is. When he was training with knives in the offseason, I mean, the guy is wild.
Oh, my gosh. His hands are so quick. He's good. His feet are quick. I mean, he just make it look – it's so effortless. And to play that position and be in the trenches like that and make it look effortless and look athletic, I mean, that's amazing.
So – you mentioned that you would go right at him. I think that's really interesting because I think that's the Cowboys' mindset is we're going to play power football. We're going to run it, and you just got to beat your man. You know, like that's kind of the way they roll. And I could see that. I think that's a really fair way to look at this.
Trust the guys that are out on the field. Like, hey, look, you're whoever's, if it's Connor Williams, whoever, it's if you know, if they're one man down – and they don't have the guys that they've had over the last two or three weeks. Hey, you're out there for a reason. We're not scared. You're not scared, are you? Hell no, I'm not scared. I'm gonna run.
I'm definitely scared.
Help him out. You know, no, psychologically.
I think that there would be something. Getting a little hypothetical, if Cowboys first possession, if they just, like you're saying, they just run right at him and just run it down their throats, and they go take it for a touchdown. There's a lot of holy crap. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of, we're here. This is our, whatever, yeah. Whoever you are. Like,
RJ, once you try to move the chains, you get the second and short. I mean, you don't want to fall behind the chains and all of a sudden facing third and eight. Mm-hmm. Because that's the tricky part there. That's the difficult part. Because then what do? You set them up for an opportunity to rust the passer.
Right.
And that's when you have the mismatches, and that's when you find you run into some problems.
You know, we're going to make our game predictions here in a second. Before we do, the last thing that I think is just worth talking about is the field. I can't believe this is a problem in 2019, but the field in L.A. is known to be a little slippery. The playoff game played there last year between the Rams and the Falcons saw players slipping all over the place. The dew from the ocean. Shout out, the Pacific? Shout out to the Pacific Ocean for playing a factor here.
The doo-doo?
Yeah. and so you mentioned the 92 title game in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Lots of mud there, slippery in a different way. How do you – because I think everybody's saying, okay, just wear different cleats, whatever. If you know, if you guys are preparing for a game, whatever, you're going somewhere, you know the field's going to be slippery. How do you prepare for that, I guess is the question.
Well, first of all, there is no venue that has history like the Coliseum. You think of, they hosted the Olympics. You know, I look at Lambeau Field. You know, Lambeau Field is known more for obviously their football team, the Green Bay Packers.
Coliseum means more for sports. Totally.
Yeah, but so when you think about the Coliseum, and I played out there, it's got this mystique to it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's old, and you know they tried to make it a little vogue by, you know, kind of adding different nuances to it. But so I think that in its own right is going to be a cool place to play. Now, as far as the field, I think you go out there and in pregame, you know, whatever, if you wear, you know, inch cleats or half inch cleats, you may extend those a little longer, but I don't think anything's going to be as bad as it was in the 92 NFC championship game. We were basically playing on top of an island.
Yeah.
There was like a moat around us. I mean, it was so bad. But I think this field, I don't think it's going to be a factor, RJ.
Okay.
I think it's a venue where guys will really appreciate. It's cool. I mean, it's unlike any place you've ever played. But as far as the conditions, I think the conditions will be pristine. I really think that the field will be okay.
You know, I mean, I hope you're right, just because from an aesthetic standpoint and from an outsider's perspective, this is the NFL's Nirvana. because you brought the team back to L.A. It's a Saturday night. That's the night everybody in L.A. wants to go out. You've got the Cowboys coming to town for the playoffs. I mean, it's just – I mean, it's bliss. I mean, it's –
Well, think about the Rams. Is this the first time that both the Rams and the Chargers have played in L.A., right? The first year?
Yep.
And both of them in the
– Chargers – so this is the third year for the Rams there, the second year for the Chargers.
Okay. God, it seems like just yesterday. I thought it was the second year. Yeah, but anyway.
It's their first year both in the playoffs, to your point.
Right. But I, for some reason, but anyway, it seems like they just moved here, and I didn't know if they played in the L.A. because I thought they – but anyway, it just seems like yesterday these two teams have moved. But my point is that what's the odds of, you know, both of these teams being in the playoffs and being out in L.A., which L.A. at times doesn't could care less who – you know, what's going on. But I think it's going to be a great environment. I think, again, it'll be interesting to see what the fan base is for both teams.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know the Rams have really, I think they're going to play, make a constant effort to say, look, don't wear, you know, cowboy blue or whatever. But that's going to be difficult because, again, it's a city where there's so many other things going on that, hell, I don't know if I want to go watch a playoff game.
Yeah, I agree. So is this the biggest game for the Dallas Cowboys since the 95?
Oh, absolutely. So, and I'm sorry I didn't let you finish. But no, I just had to finish that. Hell yes. I mean, we've been waiting a long time for this moment. 23 years. That's a long time. And think about a team that is on, you know, that is really peaking, and there's a lot of good things going. I don't know, and I'll give my prediction here shortly. I don't know what's going to happen, the outcome of the game. But even if that, if you look back at where this team was and where they are, where they're going, I mean, there's a lot of good things that are ahead for this team.
So when the Cowboys went to the divisional round in 2014, after they beat the Lions in the wild card round, and they went to Lambeau and obviously Des caught it, whatever, there was a sense of optimism going into that game, a large sense. It was like, oh, we're going to beat the Packers, and then they're going to go to Seattle, and they already beat the Seahawks this season, and they're going to go – you know, there was a real juice to them. A
lot of confidence.
Right, and then 2 years later, the Dak and Zeke rookie year, there was a different confidence. But I think there was still – because there was, oh, this is destiny. Look at these rookies that the Cowboys got, you know, et cetera. They're so amazing. Aaron Rodgers beat them last time. This is the time they get him. They're at home. There was a different confidence. It feels like there's guarded optimism here. There's guarded optimism, and if you're listening, you can let us know. I mean, if you disagree, certainly. But I feel like there isn't – Not that nobody thinks they'll win, but there is less of a belief or a smaller belief. You know, this is the most that they've been an underdog, I guess is the best way to put it. It would be kind of cool if this was the time they got it done. I do think this is the biggest game for them. I think this is the biggest game in the Jason Garrett era. You know, when I asked you what your favorite storyline was, I didn't even mention that Jerry. You know, you talk about irony, said that he saw a lot of similarities between the Rams and the Cowboys earlier this season. Everybody laughed at him. And now you have a chance to go punk them. I mean, you know.
Hey, Jerry, man, he hit a home run this year. Think about
this,
though. Crystal ball he's, you know, looking at.
Sean McVay is the chosen son of the NFL.
Yep.
And how, in a wild world, how predictable would it be that his kryptonite would be Jason Garrett? I mean, you know, it would be so poetic if the person to diffuse Sean McVay's hype, if you will, was Jason Garrett. It's just so I don't know. I think
Jason Garrett, and you mentioned 2014, and I think the expectations here is that I think people will think they'll look back and everything that's happened, you know, just starting off horribly and then, you know, all of a sudden just really just kicking it in and just going on a roll.
Mm-hmm.
And I look back, but I don't really think you think like it. I think it's, you got to get it when the getting's good. And when you're on, when you're surging and when you're creating all this momentum because you got so many dudes in that locker room that believe in each other. Yeah, to me, I think that's a different Dak Prescott. And we criticize the quarterback because that comes with the territory.
Yeah.
But I think where he is now, and what his capability is, I think there's uncharted waters with Dak. And I think this may be a game that we see, like, yeah, this is the dude of the future. There's going to be a couple of times, because it comes down to two things. comes down to the quarterback, and it comes down how well the defensive plays. And I think the quarterback in this game, on both sides, but when you look at Dallas, being able to score points and starting fast, I think we're if the defining moment we're going to find out is Dak Prescott. And I think if he's able to find another level within his play and make a couple different plays, and if the Cowboys eventually win, then we're going to be sitting there saying, you know, look, this dude is the leader of the future. No questions asked. Let's leave him alone. Hey, he's gone through a lot of adversity, but look how he's handled it.
Well, and to that point, you know, in 2016, you said elephant in the room earlier. There was a Tony Romo-shaped elephant in the room. It was awkward. I mean, you know, it wasn't what it is now. And I don't mean this at all to bring up Romo or slight him by any means, but you look in the Cowboys locker room right now, there is no doubt that Dak is their leader. I mean, he takes one step and they follow him. And he's going to take a step down the tunnel in the Coliseum. And I don't think that sort of, you know, Braveheart level of gladiator, you know,
right,
characteristic was there with that team. Whereas this team is, you know, that was just a group of guys playing a football game. This is a group of soldiers going into battle. And that's kind of the difference I see in the teams personally. I mean,
well, there's a similarities. And I think that it's interesting that you mentioned Romo, not to bring him up. And we'll get into our picks here shortly, but you know, I had a chance to talk to Flozell Adams. You know, and I was asking him about, you know, he played with Romo for 8 years, and I said, what do you think about Romo? I mean, the comparison between Dak and Romo. He said, you know what, Tony was a great leader. I mean, he didn't have the opportunities. He didn't have the offensive weapons, I guess you could say, for, you know, that Dak has. But you know, both guys are tremendous leaders. I think Dak though is a little different. I think maybe his persona and maybe his attitude works with some guys. And I think maybe his support system may be a little different. Mm-hmm. But I think that that's I think players don't really look around them because you're in this moment and you're not thinking about it. If you're looking and, you know, looking for excuses and stuff that's, you know, that's peripherally affecting you, then you don't need to be in the first place. But I think Dak, again, he just understands, you know, the huddle and understands the players around him. And I think whenever the best message you can send, RJ, is when you need a play, when your playmaker, biggest playmaker on a team, biggest leader's a quarterback, some reason he finds it down inside to make that play, that sends a message to everyone else. Hey, Ben, this guy, he's going to lead us. He's going to lead us to the promised land. And I think that's the intangible leadership skill set he has.
You know, I think everybody kind of has little things that they say when they watch any sport, whatever. It's something my dad and I have always said, you know, I mean, for a long time watching football is, you know, that guy would die out there, you know, and sort of in today's era of football, the guy I think of is Julian Edelman from the New England Patriots. Mm-hmm. Julian Edelman would die out there playing football for the Patriots. Like, you get that vibe. And I think it's hard to not have your game or at least your energy be elevated by that. Dak is kind of that guy. Dak's that kind of guy that, and I think the difference between him and Edelman in this example is not only would Dak die out there, and I'm speaking to a hypothetical Cowboys player, he would die for you. You know, I mean, he loves you. I mean, he would take one for you, man, because he's your guy. He's your leader. He knows that's what it is. I mean, he understands his role. He's going to fall on the sword no matter what, and I think that that's something. There's a different energy with this team, I think, than 2 years ago. They're a different level of belief. They believe in one another. They believe in their coach. They believe in their leaders. There's no drama, no, you know, nobody questioning them, nobody doing anything. They have one common goal. And that's why it's prediction time, and I'm going to take them. I think they win. I know that's crazy. I know it's absurd, considering they were 3-5. I think they win. I'm going to say 26-23. This is the divisional round of the NFL playoffs is the best overall weekend in sports. The only one that comes close is Masters weekend. And we typically get four incredible games. And I think the Cowboys pull this off in just a thrilling fashion.
Well, we both agree on the Masters weekend. That's one of the best times of the year. I think the thing that you and I do disagree on is who's going to win this game.
Oh,
you know, I early on this week I was kind of on the fence, and I was on the other side of the fence for the Cowboys. But the more and more I look at this game, I think that there's some – there may be some issues for the Cowboys. I really think that offensively, the if the Rams come out and they play anything the way they did when they had those got those 13 wins, that's going to be just going to possess some problems. And I think defensively, the matchups there with Aaron Donald, you know, I think the Cowboys have a chance to, I think they can win, but will they win? No. I got the Rams winning 28-17.
Ooh, I mean, that's easy to believe. I mean, honestly, you could see it going that way.
But it wouldn't surprise me if the Cowboys win. I'm just, you know, for me, maybe there's just, they need to make that one more step, and maybe this game may not be it. But I'm hoping they win, but I'm not going to bet with my heart. I just think the Cowboys, they're going to come up short.
I will say sort of my last thought here is if they come up short, and I don't mean this to sort of sound like a consolation prize or a loser's mentality or anything, but if they come up short, dude, they're already playing with house money. You know what I mean? Like this season, they were 3-5. You know what I mean? And they pulled off something incredible. Now that we know that draft pick will be in the final eight of the first round, that draft pick for Amari Cooper is well spent. So there's no doubt about that. And I think that there's a level of trust in Jason Garrett from Cowboys fans. And so, again, if they lose, you already defied a lot of odds, is my point. And there's no shame in that.
I have a bold prediction, though.
Oh, okay.
I'm allowed to have a bold prediction. My 1A pick is a Cowboys win and the Eagles win. And the Cowboys play the NFC Championship back here. Back at AT&T Stadium,
I would vomit. I would absolutely vomit. I mean, in a sense, you know, I talked about sort of poetry and things like that. It does kind of feel like it would come down to that, right? I mean, like it of course, you know, of course it would be Cowboys Eagles. It would burn the world to the ground. That would, if that's the case, next week will be the longest week of our lives.
That would be a tremendous week. That'd be a tremendous problem to have, to be able to have to vomit in a game like that, to know when they did. Both those teams are playing the NFC Championship game.
Yeah, but you mentioned the 92 Cowboys. I think, you know, playoff win over the Eagles really sparked things for that team, certainly, and took you to San Francisco. So who knows?
We will see.
This time they'll go back from California to the Eagles game, but we'll see.
Hopefully no earthquakes tonight.
That's true. Or Saturday
or tomorrow night when they, yeah. Because yeah. In San Francisco, I have that vivid memory of the earthquake the night before the game. Now – I'm able to retract my pick if they do have one, right?
So you're saying if an earthquake happens.
If there is an earthquake, why they're the night before the game, and that's what happened when we went back in 92, the night before we played our game, we end up winning, then I may have to just tweet something out and say, look, I'm going with the irony of RJ Ochoa.
Hey, I kind of like this involving, you know, that's like, hey God, if you want to throw an earthquake out, and God willing nobody gets hurt, just a small 2-second earthquake,
the act of God,
you know, I'll change my pick. So I like it. Well, so we'll see what happens. You and I will be on Instagram Live on Friday afternoon. We'll tweet about that so people can watch and interact. Tony, it was a blast. Let's hope we have something great to talk about on Monday, and hope we have another game to get ready for. We'll see what happens out in LA. Hopefully Jerry's party lives up to the hype, though.
I hope so too. Bad you and I couldn't fly out there on this plane and go to the party and
we'll
come
take
back.
The yacht. We'll take the yacht. Yeah. We'll jump on in the Gulf and we'll go around. You know what I mean? So,
hey, that may be him christening the 350-foot yacht out there on the Pacific Coast. Who knows?
That's a good point. Thanks for listening, everybody. Enjoy the game, and we'll see you Monday. This was the 750.
Hello, you're listening to Simone de Rochefort, one of the hosts of The Polygon Show. It's a show all about the video games that you'll never have time to play, brought to you by four friends who are just as passionate about food, soft drinks, and TV shows as we are about video games. Every Friday, we bring you a new hour of personal stories, like how we found the best way to play Yakuza 0, or even what happens when you play so much Zelda that you hurt your hands and can't play games anymore. Above all, we just have a really good time talking about the games that we love. Check out the show on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcatcher. You can also find us at Polygon Show on Twitter and send a tweet to say hi. Thanks for listening.